what happened last week. We're going to then move into Acts 27 and 28, and this is actually our last two chapters in the book of Acts, and I hope you've been enjoying it as much as I have. I have learned so much. So last week, Agnes was teaching, and she reminded us that God had a plan for Paul's life. And even though it looked like something awful was happening, it was all under God's control. We know that Paul was taken prisoner in Jerusalem, and then because he said, "I am a Roman citizen," he was then going to be taken to Rome, where he would be tried by Caesar. And we think, that's awful. Poor Paul, to have to go through all that. But you know what? Paul had real peace and real joy in his heart because he knew that God had a plan for his life. And throughout Romans, we saw Paul talking about that. He said in Acts 19 and 21, "I must visit Rome." Acts 20 and 21, "If only I may complete the task the Lord Jesus has given me." And that task, of course, was the task Jesus gave him on the road to Damascus, and that was to take the message of Jesus, Jesus the Messiah, to the Gentiles and to kings. And he was going to do that by going to Rome. And then Acts 23 and 11, last week, Agnes said, "Take courage." I love this verse. And it was given to Paul in the middle of the night when he needed the most. "Take courage. As you have testified about me in Jerusalem, so you can also testify about me in Rome." So as we finish the book of Acts this morning, Paul is about to get on a ship. And he gets on the ship with several other people. He gets on with Luke. And we know Luke wrote the book of Acts. We know that Luke is narrating this. And he actually, quite a bit throughout this story today, he says, "We got on a ship. We did this. We did this." So Paul and Luke were on this journey together. And there's another young man that is also mentioned as being one of the passengers on this journey, and his name was Aristarchus, whatever. Anyway, they got on the ship with other prisoners, and they made their way up the coast to Sidon. There we go. All right, here we go. Right there. It's working. So they went on the ship. It took about 2 weeks, and they finally arrived in Sidon. And when they got to Sidon, there was another person on the ship that was very important, and I forgot to mention his name. He was Julius, and Julius was a centurion. He was a soldier of the Imperial Regiment. He was a powerful man. He was probably very harsh, having been a soldier. But you know what? It's amazing how Julius seems to come into a friendship and a relationship with Paul. And when they get to Sidon, Paul is actually allowed to get off the ship, even though he's a prisoner. And Julius allows him to go on shore and to meet with some of the believers. And the believers provide Paul with food, with water, with whatever he might need for the journey. Because you need to understand, this is not a cruise ship by any means. They do not have food, they do not have water, they do not have any shelter. They have to look after their own supplies, their own needs. So Paul was being equipped with the things he would need for the journey. So they keep going, they get back on the ship, and they go from Sidon, and they start their journey all the way through here over to Myra. And it was a bit of a rough journey, but they got there. And when they got to Myra, Julius the centurion was able to find another ship. And this ship was called an Alexandrian ship. And I want to tell you a little bit about this so you understand how dangerous this journey really was. This ship was quite large, and we know as we read further on in the story that it actually could hold 276 passengers. So it was a big ship. But it wasn't a stable ship. It had a shallow keel. It had one main sail. It had two oars that they used to guide it. And in the Bible, they call it rudders, although it's not really a rudder. It was two oars. And that was about it. That's how they traveled. And, of course, they were very dependent on the wind. And they were very dependent on the night sky because it was the stars that compassed them. It was the sun that helped them find their direction. And if the winds were really bad, they were at the mercy of the winds. If there were no stars and no sun, they could not tell where they were or where they were headed. So Paul and 276 other passengers, some of them prisoners, some of them from other walks of life, were not sure. But this is a cargo ship. It was going from Alexandria to Rome carrying cargo, and in this case, it was probably carrying grain. So it was by no means the kind of ship you would want to travel on, and it was probably very crowded. So they get on the ship, but before they get on, there's a bit of a debate. And the debate is about, what are we going to do? The storms are starting to come up. It was October, and in October, in that part of the area, it was not good sailing time because the winds were unpredictable. There was poor visibility because of the time of year. You would not choose to travel in October, and it says it was the Day of Atonement or the day after the fast, so we know that it was a season of very difficult, hazardous travel. And so they're talking amongst themselves and trying to decide, well, what should we do? You know, we don't want to stay here in Myra. We want to get going. And so Paul speaks up. And in verse 10, Paul says, "Men, I can see that our voyage is going to be dangerous and bring great loss to ship and cargo and to our own lives." When Paul was writing his letter to the Corinthians, he tells them that he was in three shipwrecks. So this might have been the third. So he knows what he's talking about. He's saying, look at the weather. Look at what time of year it is. We should not be going out on this ship. But the pilot and the crew and the owner of the ship and probably quite a few of the passengers said, you know, majority rules. We want to get going. We don't want to be here. So they decide that they would go ahead with their journey. And they get on the ship, and off they set, and they were just waiting for a nice gentle breeze to come up so that they could get going. They needed the wind. So the gentle breeze came up, and off they went. But that gentle breeze turned into a hurricane-type wind. And as soon as that happened, everything changed. They no longer had any control about where they were going or what direction they were going to go in. They were tossed to and fro by this terrible storm. Nothing they could do. So let's take a look at this storm and this shipwreck. What did they do under these circumstances? And this is a beautiful piece of writing because it's historical, it's accurate, and people read this passage and they say, wow, that's what it was really like in those days. And it's considered a very historical, well-written document. So Luke, in writing this, affirms the fact that this is God's word. It's historically sound. So as we look at these men on the ship, and the ship is being tossed to and fro, there's strong winds blowing, I just can't imagine what it was like. I'm not a person that likes the water, and I certainly do not like storms or waves or... My husband will take me out in his boat, and most of the time I'm just kind of sitting there like this. And I can remember one occasion when we were doing a little road trip. My husband and I decided we would take the ferry across part of Lake Huron, and we were going from Tobermory to Manitoulin Island. And when we started out, it wasn't bad. But by the time we'd been on the ferry for just a short period of time, the winds came up, and they were big waves, and I was so sick, and I thought, I don't ever want to do this again. I do not like the thought of being in a storm, so I can't imagine what these men were experiencing, but it was extremely rough, difficult. They must have feared for their life. Anyway, what did they do? Well, it says they took every measure they possibly could. They began to lighten the ship. And the first thing they did was they took their lifeboats and they brought them onto the deck because the lifeboats were filling with water. And then they passed ropes under the front of the ship to try and hold it together. And then they lowered the sea anchor, hoping that it would stop them from crashing into a sandbar, because they had no idea where they were. And the worst thing that could happen is if they crashed into a sandbar, that would be it. So they lowered the anchor and they put down the sail. And then they began to throw things overboard. They threw over the cargo. They threw over the tackle. They were desperate. And it says that they were in this condition for 14 days. I could barely stand it for 10 minutes. So for 14 days, that's a long time. And then this crew, this group of people, they said in verse 20, when neither sun nor stars appeared for many days and the storm continued raging, we finally gave up all hope. We finally gave up all hope of being saved. They just, this is it. But you know what? Paul did not give up hope. What did Paul do? And I want to read to you part of this passage starting in 27, verse 21. And I'm just going to read bits and pieces of it. So I hope you can just listen. So starting just at the last part of verses 21, this is what Paul did. Paul stood up before them and said, "Men, you should have taken my advice not to sail from Crete. Then you would have spared yourself this damage and loss." I sort of thought, that's kind of like saying, "I told you so," you know? But Paul knew the God who was the creator, and he had a very strong sense that something bad was going to happen, but they didn't follow his advice. "But now," Paul says, "I urge you to keep up your courage, because not one of you will be lost. Only the ship will be destroyed. Last night, an angel of God, whose I am and whom I serve, stood before me and said, 'Do not be afraid, Paul. You must stand trial before Caesar, and God has graciously given you the lives of all who sail with. So keep your courage, men, for I have faith, I have hope in God that it will happen just as he told me. Nevertheless, we must run aground on some island.'" So after 14 days, and this was still continuing, I can't imagine what it would have been like on that ship. And then farther on it says, "They dropped four anchors from the stern, and they prayed for daylight." Well, that's the first time they prayed. But under these circumstances, and Paul is saying, "I know who I am. I know who my Father is." And he's had a huge influence on them. And they're starting to pray about their situation. And they prayed for daylight. And then they did something else that was a little unusual. Just before dawn, Paul urged them all to eat. "For the last 14 days, nobody has been eating any food. You have to keep up your strength," he says. So he took some bread, and what did he do? He gave thanks. I can't imagine eating, and I can't imagine giving thanks under those circumstances, but that's what they did. They recognized that God was in control. And they called out to him, and they gave thanks despite their horrible circumstance. Altogether, there were 276 passengers. And then the ship, finally, they threw all of their provisions over after they'd eaten. They got rid of all the grain. And when daylight came, they did not recognize the land, but they saw a bay with a sandy beach where they decided to run the ship aground if they could. And so they ran the ship aground, and Julius, the centurion, was very aware of what could happen, because when you were a prisoner, if something looked like you had the opportunity to escape, then you would be killed. And so the law was that if something happens, you kill the prisoners. But Julius intervened, and when he realized that their lives were in danger, they were going to have to abandon ship, Julius said, "Do not kill anyone." So what they did was they jumped overboard. If you could swim, you jumped overboard. They could see that land wasn't too far away. They were stuck on a sandbar, and the ship was breaking apart. So some of them swam to shore, and the rest of them that couldn't swim grabbed onto planks, and they made it to shore. And it says not one person perished. Of the 276, that's very, very unusual. But God is sovereign. God is in control. God has a plan for Paul's life, and his plan was that Paul was going to get to Rome. So they arrive on the island of Malta, and more is going to happen. Like, we think, Paul, you've been through enough. But you know what? The people on Malta welcomed Paul and these 276 passengers with courtesy and kindness and hospitality. They did everything they could to help care for these this large group of people. And during that time, Paul was helping them build a fire so they could get warm. And he reached out to get a stick, and on the stick was a snake, and the snake bit his hand. And he sort of thought, oh my goodness, here he is bitten by a poison snake. He's going to die for sure. But no, because God has a plan for Paul. And in spite of these difficult circumstances, Paul is in God's hands. So he did not die. But he went even further, and he heard that the governor on the island, Publius, his father was very sick. So he went to the home of Publius, and he prayed with Publius, and he laid his hands on him, and he was healed. And then, of course, when everybody else on the island heard that Paul was healing people, they flocked to Paul, and many others were healed. It's kind of interesting that there was such a camaraderie amongst these people, that they cared for each other. It's even known today on the island of Malta about Paul and his journey and how he was shipwrecked. And there is a bay, and there's a picture of it, that is called St. Paul's Bay. And it's possible that this is where they came ashore after the shipwreck. So Paul stays with them for about 3 months. And finally, the winter season is over, the weather changes, and they are able to get back onto a ship that had wintered there. And off they go again towards Rome. But you know, when I was reading this story about Malta, and I kept thinking, you know, reminds me of what happened in 9/11. And I don't know if any of you have seen that the musical. Was it called From Far, Come From Away? Right. And the flight 929 landed in Gander. And the people in Gander embraced everybody on that plane and showed them kindness and hospitality. And on that plane was a woman, and her name was, Jill Briscoe. And I love Jill Briscoe. She is an amazing Bible teacher, an amazing woman. She was on that flight, and she writes her story about what happened, and she called it Grounded. And she says how, in that circumstance, she was able to share her faith, and people that were afraid and fearful and questioning God, she was able to speak into their lives. And some welcomed her message. Others didn't want to have anything to do with it. But she had this opportunity to share her faith, and just as Paul did on Malta. So we have God in control again. Paul using every opportunity he had to share the gospel. So Paul is now on his way to Rome. And as you see our little map here, I just want to point this out to you, because they landed in Fair Havens, and that's where they decided they could not, they needed to go ahead, so they got on the ship, and off they went to Malta. They had the shipwreck in Malta, and now they're on the way up here to Rome. And there's this little place here called Puteoli, and it is actually the main harbor for Rome. So that's where they headed. So Paul is on his way to Rome, and when he gets to Rome, he is actually he gets off at this port, and there are actually Christians there. And he must have been just thrilled to think that here I've been through all this. I was blessed on Malta, and here I am blessed again because I get to be with some of my Christian friends. And then, of course, he had to walk from the port to Rome along the Appian Way. And as he was walking along that way, other Christians from Rome came out to meet him and to greet him. And I thought, well, it's interesting that these Christians were there. And these Christians probably came from Jerusalem quite a while ago when they fled persecution. And we know that Paul wrote a letter to the Romans, and the letter he wrote to the Romans was about 10 years before. So these people that are walking out to greet Paul are the people that would have received the letter to the Romans. So Paul arrives in Rome, and there are some more good things that are going to happen here, because what happens is Paul is given a house. He's rented a house, and he's under house arrest. He's not put into some dark prison, but he's put into a house, a rented house. And while he is there in this rented house, he is able to receive guests and visitors. And one of the first things he does is that he invites the Jewish leaders to come. And they do come. And they want to know what's going on because they're curious. And they said, and it was only 3 days after he'd landed, it says, that the Jewish leaders came to Paul. And they said, but we want to hear what your views are, for we know that people everywhere are talking about the sect. And that would have been the Christians, the group called The Way. And they wanted to know. So Paul didn't even have to go out. They came to him. And then it says, and then people came in large numbers from morning to night, and he was able to share with them the kingdom of God, Jesus the Messiah. Some were convinced, some were not convinced. We know that often that the Lord lays on our heart that he wants us to share our faith, and we make ourselves available to do that. But what happens when we share our faith in the heart of that person is out of our control. It's out of our hands. It's in God's hands. And Paul says here, you will ever be hearing, and he's talking about the people that he's sharing this good news with. He says, you will ever be hearing, but never understanding. You will be ever seeing, but never perceiving. For this people's hearts had become calloused. They hardly heard with their ears, and they had closed their eyes. So our job as believers is to be available, to share what God has done as our life, our relationship with Jesus, whatever we can. But what happens after that is between that person and the Lord will work in their heart. The Lord will soften their heart. The Lord will speak to them. So don't be discouraged if you've shared your faith with someone and they walk away and they're not interested. Leave it up to God. So Paul is excited about this experience. Now, this wonderful time in Paul's life did not continue. And then the story kind of ends. It says in verse 30-31 that Paul was there for about 2 years. And then everything just kind of stops. And you're kind of left hanging, as Marjorie said. You know, well, what about the rest of the story? And I think maybe it just stops like that because the rest of the story is us. That God had a call on Paul's life. God knew what he was doing with Paul. Paul was to do many wonderful things as he turned his life over to the Lord. Paul was able to go all sorts of places. He suffered. He was in danger. He was shipwrecked. Some horrible things happened to Paul. But Paul knew that he was part of God's plan. And his whole purpose and the purpose of the book of Acts is to show how Christianity grew and how it spread because of the individuals that took their faith and shared it with others. And we are the rest of that story. It is our responsibility to take the news of Jesus to the people that are involved in our lives. And Paul was also able during that time to write books. And he wrote, of course, the letter to Ephesians, the letter to the Philippians, to the Colossians, and to Philemon. So a lot was going on while Paul was in Rome. But you know what? I want to know the rest of the story. And I could not just leave it there. So I did a little bit of reading, and Christian tradition has it that Paul actually went to trial and that he was acquitted. And then after that, Paul was given some freedom and he was able to travel. And it is believed by many that during this time, he actually did another journey to Spain. Eventually, Paul did come back and he was imprisoned again. But this time, under really difficult circumstances, he was thrown in a dungeon. He was left to rot, so to speak. And a lot of his friends abandoned him. We know that Luke stayed nearby. We know that Timothy came to visit. And we know these things from the letters that Paul wrote. And he expresses what was going on in his life at that time. And then we also know from tradition that it is possible that when the great fire broke out in Rome, it was a terrible fire. It destroyed Rome. And Nero was in power at the time. Nero believed that the Christians were responsible. And so he instigated a huge time of persecution for Christians. And it is believed that during this time that Nero had Paul beheaded. So Paul died for his faith. He never stopped believing that God had a purpose for his life, and he trusted God completely with every circumstance. So that's the rest of the story. But I want you to focus on the fact that Jesus, who lives within us, has called us to be like Paul and to share his story wherever we go. Psalm 31, 14 and 15 says, "But I trust in you, O Lord. I say, you are my God. My times are in your hands." That's a hard thing to say, isn't it? That my times are in your hands. Can you trust God? Do you have hope in him? No matter what your circumstances are, can you say, "My times are in your hands. Whatever happens, Lord, are in your hands"? So, I have a question. How is life treating you? You know, we all have a story, and quite often when we're young, we have this story about how we think our life should go. Maybe you have visions of having this amazing career and doing this and doing that. Or maybe you have this story in your mind, oh, I'm going to meet the most amazing man. We're going to travel. Or I'm going to meet this most amazing man and we're going to have children and we're going to have grandchildren. But does it turn out like that? Perhaps not. So what do you do when it doesn't turn out like that? When your story is not what you thought it should be, but rather it's God's story. And with God's story, things can be quite different because he wants us to be molded and shaped into his likeness. So life is full of unexpected things. And sometimes you could even say we run into shipwrecks. You know, it's amazing the number of times we use nautical terms to discuss or to talk about our life journey and what happens in life. For example, I'm a wreck today. You know, I got up on the wrong side of the bed. My hair is a mess. I'm a wreck. Or we say, tossed to and fro. I've lost my bearings. I don't know which way to go. I can't make my decisions. What about out of my depth? Or I'm in over my head. Don't we say that? My ship is sinking. Throw me a lifeline. Or it took the wind out of my sails. And you could think of these all as moments of shipwreck. And they may not be big shipwrecks. They might be just little things that happen in your life where you feel a moment of darkness and dismay, and you're not sure what to do, and you're afraid, and you're anxious.